Mondays on CITR 101.9 FM.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM, Unceded Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. Collective meetings are hosted on Thursdays at 6 p.m. in the lower atrium of the Nest CITR station, with a remote option as well. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unceded Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshie on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshie. Eat. Energize.
And welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. We are very happy to hear your lovely voice there, Harmela. Shout out. This is Hail Discordia, coming at you live once again.
Hey, everybody.
Which is so awesome. And we're live from Vancouver, and this is Zoe and Izzy. We'd like to begin by acknowledging that we are situated on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. We are grateful guests on this land, and we urge you to be thoughtful about how you move through this territory. Today, we're going to talk about spaces, both physical and otherwise, and the way we influence and are influenced by them. We hope that all of you can reflect on the relationship that you share with the spaces that you move through and your positionality. So we're really excited to be back live with you today, and we're going to start by getting right into our thought question, which you all know and love is the way that we like to begin our episodes. Zoe, do you want to hit us with this one?
I would love to hit y'all with this one. So our thought question for this episode is, how does language shape the spaces we inhabit, both physical and otherwise? In what ways has language use added to or detracted from your feeling of belonging in a given environment? So we've been talking a lot about language and about slang, whether that be just like the literal languages we speak or just the colloquial vernacular that we use amongst our friends in different spaces. It's just been a topic of discussion that me and Izzy have been having as of recently.
Yeah. I think it's just kind of been in both of our minds as we meet new people that speak different languages, and you're learning Spanish, mm-hmm. and I'm learning Spanish, mm-hmm. and it's just fun to think about how different languages work and the effect that language can have as a social force on people and on spaces.
Yeah. And I think to elaborate on that, okay, well, later up, we do have a survey that we sent out that we got 15 lovely responses to.
Woo!
And we asked you guys about your friendship lingo. If you've seen that like trend on TikTok, you know what I'm talking about. But if you haven't, then it's just the tiny little things, little phrases, little words that you say between your friends that is pretty specific to your guys' friendship. So in about 15 minutes, we're going to get into that. But on the topic of language and how it shapes the world around us and how we use language as a way of interacting with one another, we can start with an example that we have. So one of them is AF, as in AF, but like said out loud.
You all know what AF stands for. It's mm-hmm. an expletive, mildly. I think we got that from Molly, huh?
We did get that from Molly.
It's used as more than just, because usually you'd say, oh, I'm hungry AF, or I'm, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But Molly uses it in so many scenarios that it just becomes a general affirmative. Like, I'll be like, Molly, should we go to the store? And she'll say, yeah, AF.
Yeah. And they all work.
They all work.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
But so even that, just using that, I feel, I don't know. It just, I like it. And it makes, I feel like it makes the space, the environment, the friendship, like, fun and playful and cutesy to just, like, trade little things like that.
Totally. And then in May, I just went on a trip. I was traveling. And I was traveling with someone who I just met kind of during the trip. And she started picking up on my lingo. And by the end of the trip, she was saying AF all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got back to Vancouver and she said, Izzy, all my friends are asking me where I got this and why I'm saying it. And I was like, yeah, that's me.
No, exactly.
Because it's so sweet to be able to share things like that, too.
Exactly. It kind of feels like, and then sometimes I will say a piece of slang or something, or just little words like that I got from somebody else. And I'll think about them when I say it. So it keeps them fresh on the mind.
Totally. And it's so fun to influence each other with language and also find the ways that different languages have new things to offer, just like new people do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested, Zoe, to hear what you have to say about Spanish grammar.
Ooh, I've been waiting for this one. Okay, Spanish grammar. My first and only, like, fluent language is English. And so learning a different language has been a especially just in university, like, not learning it young has been a process, but, like, a process I've really enjoyed. And I really love learning a language. And one of the things when I was first started learning it that just I thought was really interesting was how do I put it? In English, if I have a temporary emotion, I'm sad, I'm tired, I'm hungry, whatever, the grammar of it forces you to embody it. You have to say, I am this and I am that, and apply it to your identity. Whereas in Spanish, there's a way to say it grammatically that acknowledges the temporariness of it. Like, you can, like, there's ser and estar, and it's like ser is more embodying, it's acknowledging the permanence of it, whereas estar is more temporary and it acknowledges that it's just the situation right now. Like, I can say, like, oh, I'm tired, but not mean I'm a tired person, or I'm sad, and it's not like I'm a sad person. Those are very two different things. And it's acknowledged in the grammar. And I just thought it was really cool. It just made me think about it.
I think that's so interesting, because before you brought that up, I hadn't really thought about how limiting it could be to only have one way to express,
mm-hmm.
to, like, predicate yourself. You can only use one verb for it, and having two different verbs for to be in Spanish allows you to kind of think about the things that you are and how permanent they are and how temporary they are. And it's so helpful to remember that emotions are temporary.
Yeah, exactly. And also just with, like, same thing in English, like, you could add more words to it and be like, oh, I'm tired, but not, like, forever. Oh, I'm sad, but, like, it's just kind of for now. And, like, that just takes way more words and way more explanation, and that explanation isn't always going to be perfect. So I just think it's cool that you can take that complex description and it's just literally into two words and it's just embedded into the grammar.
Yeah, I love that. I love what we can learn from the influence of not just different people, but from different languages, like I was saying. And something else that I have thought is really cool from Spanish is that, so I mentioned that I went traveling and I went to Argentina and Chile with UBC, actually. Shout out FHIS. French, Hispanic, and Italian studies.
Shout out, for real.
Yeah. And we were working on a poetry translation project with the Mapuche people, which is an indigenous group from modern day Argentina and Chile. Their territory kind of spans those two. And I met a Mapuche translator while I was in Chile who was talking to us about the Mapuche vision of conversation, which is a different... So this is actually not Spanish, because the Mapuche language is Mapusungun, but I learned this in Spanish because he said it to me in Spanish. But the Mapuche vision is that conversation is like a person. And between two contributors, it is born and it ages and it gets older and it can die if it is not taken care of. And I thought that was such a beautiful way to think about something that we share between us, because, like, something else that I wanted to kind of bring to light in this episode is the thought of decentering the two sides of a conversation and centering what's between them, like, which is also about perspective. It's about thinking about something that now lies between two people rather than just coming from one side. I think it helps for community. I think it helps for crossing, you know, across spaces, connection. It's just a very interesting perspective.
That is so cool. And that conversation about language being a person that has to be cared for and nurtured in a way, that reminds me of something that I read in this book. It's called Mona by Paula Olijarak, I think. O-L-O-I-X-A-R-A-C. And in the book, it's to give a very brief, just like overview of what the book is about. It follows this student, this person who's at Stanford, and they end up going to Sweden for this big literary prize. And it's a mix of a conference and finding out who won the prize at the end. And it's just her interacting with all of these different writers, with all of these different thoughts about writing and just the literary world as a whole. And then you get to the end of it and they talk about the award. But so it's just, it feels like a book of conversations. And in it, somebody was talking about how they felt that they had to create a language from scratch because their father was deaf and also blind. And so they had to find a new way to communicate. And they said, quote, "A language is always an invention of the world from scratch, even if it's just between a father and son. Learning a language means inventing every single thing it might contain, even though it usually seems like language is something that already exists, something that was already here before us, if only because other mouths have already pronounced the words." So,
that's beautiful.
I just thought that was cool because how do you encapsulate everything ever, every noun, every verb, every thought, every feeling into a language? Because there are even words in different languages that you can't directly translate to another language because it's just so specific. It's just, I don't know, it just embodies such an intricate feeling that there's just not even a direct translation. And I just think it's really cool.
Yeah, that makes me think of a quote that I read in the preface to a Sanskrit text that I was reading for some Indian philosophy, early Indian philosophy. And the introduction was about the translation of the languages.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a quote which is kind of, it's kind of horrible, but I think it's interesting the way that it connects to translation. It was, "Translation is like a woman. If it is faithful, it is not beautiful. And if it is beautiful, it is not faithful." Or,
whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the point is that a faithful translation in that thought would be like exact one mm-hmm. word to the other.
Yeah.
But then you're missing the beauty of it because
yes.
translation is about representing the feeling, the spirit of it, the vibe that the words give.
Yes.
By the way, I don't feel that about women at all.
No, of course.
Disclaimer.
Yeah.
We're so feminist and love women.
Yes.
But it's an interesting quote to think about translation.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wait, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. Because we were even talking about lingua franca,
mm-hmm.
and which is like a third language or a second language or any language that isn't of a person's first fluent language that you can speak and that another person can speak, and it's more of an in-between. But
yeah, the first time that I learned the term lingua franca was to describe Latin in medieval Europe. So it's like mm-hmm. everybody comes from a different language, but like a written language or like a shared language for politics might be a lingua franca because you sort of meet in the middle.
Yes, exactly. And I was looking at a couple of papers that was talking about how English acts as a lingua franca because, again, as I just learn more about different languages and just how emotions are expressed, what, not even just in the words that can be used, but in the grammar and in the cadence that you can speak it at and in the colloquial sayings that mean one thing but directly translate to another thing in English. I think like the emotion of it all is, I wonder if there's a lot of emotion in English as a language compared to other languages. But you being able to speak Spanish and also French and also English, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like there's some, like Juliet, I think, was saying that sometimes she feels like she can express anger better in French than she can in English.
I think that's so interesting, too. Like, in the case of someone like Juliet, I think growing up with multiple languages, there are associations that aren't just about the structure of the language, but also when that's been prevalent in your life and mm-hmm. what emotions are kind of easier in different languages. But it's funny that you ask about English, because I once heard, I believe, a Spanish professor or a Spanish teacher, I think this was in high school or something, say that to a non-native speaker, like to her, and I guess she talked about this with other non-native English speakers, that English sounds like a dog barking.
Yeah.
Versus like the fluid kind of connected romance languages of like Spanish or Italian, mm-hmm. you think of the flow. And English, I guess, was so much choppier to someone who hadn't spoken it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And I really love the other languages that I speak and learning how to express myself differently. But I prefer to write in English. Like I have this mm-hmm. special love and appreciation of the written word in English that I don't know will ever be replaced by another language, because that's the language that I learned words in. Like that's yeah. the language that I learned expression in. So there's still something kind of special about it for me.
Yeah. That is so cool. That's awesome.
Like English is not, I don't think it's the coolest language at all.
No, it's not.
But I still have that connection, you know?
Yeah. I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, we are about at that time to start going through surveys. Guys, I'm so excited.
We love including you guys in our episodes. This is the most fun part. And shout out to all of our awesome friends and awesome contributors who are helping us out.
Yeah. Thank you guys all for submitting. And for those of you who are listening now, your mom is listening. Potentially.
Mom, yeah, she might be.
Oh my God.
My mom
Hi,
came
Izzy's
and
mom.
Visited me, and now she's driving back to Seattle from Vancouver. Yeah. A potential road trip. And if she's not, then she'll listen to this recorded and she'll still hear the shout out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we love you, Mama.
Shout out to Izzy's mom.
But let's get into the survey questions.
Let's totally get into the survey questions. Okay, we have 15 responses. Izzy and I have not seen these yet. So we're going to go back and forth.
Blind reveal.
And we're gonna read it out. Okay. So our first submitter is Jack. So our questions are, what's your piece of friendship lingo, an example of usage, and where did it come from?
Is this Jack Miller?
I think so.
Shout out.
So, what is your piece of friendship lingo? Boots.
Nice.
Example of usage. That's boots, or simply boots, when something is good.
That's so funny. That's an adaptation of, like, slay the boots house down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which is also a ridiculous phrase if you're not familiar with any of that lingo. That makes me think of Callie.
Yes! Oh my God, I miss Callie.
Shout out Callie.
Shout out Callie in Berlin.
Our dear friend on exchange in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But she loves to say boots.
Mm-hmm. So... So where did it come from in terms of how did it come into this person's life? My good friend Abby was in a dilemma of buying denim boots, a.k.a. jutes, like like jean boots, at the thrift. And thus the word sprouted as excitement came over the group at the sight of these awesome boots.
Oh, wait, that's amazing. It's not even about Slay the Boots.
Right.
That is so cool.
That's so sweet. I love that that's such a specific... like, moment that happened.
Yeah, I also love the way that you wrote that. Thanks, Jack.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
Wow. This is adorable. Okay, these submitters, shout out to our CITR community,
mm-hmm.
are Danny, Jay, B, and Steph.
Oh my God.
So we have a whole little, and I'm looking at Jay right now, actually, because I can see them in the studio.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
Their piece of friendship lingo, these four, is Beconomy, spelled mm-hmm. like B-E-E, the animal,
mm-hmm.
and economy. Example of usage. the Beconomy started from how often and how much we smoke each other's ganja and share snacks. We very quickly dumped the I'll pay you back and replaced it with Beconomy, which means that it will find its way back around. It doesn't matter. Our circular economy will deal with it.
Oh my God. I love that. I love that. I love that.
That is hilarious.
Wait, that's awesome. No, because honestly, like, it will come back. It will make its way back.
It will always come back.
Mm-hmm.
That is so awesome. Okay. Next up. These are so fun.
These are awesome.
We love you guys.
Okay. I'm just taking...
Yeah, you can look through them because there are 15. And we don't have time to say all of them, but we're still grateful for every single one of you who submitted for us.
Okay. So in name, they put Kitty Cat Kisses Meow Meow Mwah Basi Basi Dalitalia. I don't speak Italian.
Baci dall'Italia.
Yeah, baci baci.
I also don't speak Italian. Why did I? I just took that like I do speak Italian.
No, because I know that you don't speak Italian also, but I was like, Izzy will get it. It's French, Spanish. Like, there's something in there. Well. So I don't know exactly who submitted it, but I'm a fan. Piece of friendship lingo. Shonda, as in Queen Mother Shonda Rhimes. Examples of usage. More or less like a figure to pray to. Synonymous to begging the writers to change the plot. Ooh, I like that.
Yo, like, ask Shonda.
For example, where is Shonda when we need her? I'm not trying to get on Shonda's bad side. Shonda really needs to turn this boat around if we want to walk that stage. Ooh, I like it. I like it.
That is hilarious. You guys are writing these so well.
Yeah. Where did it come from? One of the girls had an expected health diagnosis after a series of unfortunate events. Oh, I'm sorry. To make light of the situation, she joke about her being like a character in Grey's Anatomy / a soap opera, and then I started jokingly praying to Miss Rhimes. Ooh, okay. Also, comforting. I would be so comforted. That's so sweet.
Yeah, that is comforting.
Yeah.
I love the replacement of the writers of the plot or mm-hmm. anybody who could be running this show. Let's just say it's Shonda Rhimes. Yeah. That makes me feel better about it.
Right? Exactly. Because if I know that Shonda Rhimes is behind it, I'm like, okay, I know it's going to be good at least. I know it's going to be interesting.
I'm like, you got plans.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
That is hilarious.
Moving on to our next one. These are so fun, guys. Oh my God.
Okay. Wait, this is awesome. I want to pick a great one for this.
And again, if you're just tuning in, this is Hail Discordia on CITR 101.9 FM. We are just listening to responses to our survey talking about friendship lingo, just little things that you and your friends say between you two. Maybe you got it from media, maybe you got it from life events, whatever it may be. It's just a fun little inside joke, just a fun little words that you all throw around. So we got some survey responses from our lovely listeners that we're just sharing right now. So sit back and just enjoy.
So this survey contribution is again from a group. Love that you guys are coming at this together.
Mm-hmm.
This is Sky and Ethan and Nico and Juanjo and Lennon. We love every single one of you.
Oh my God, sweeties.
And miss you all also. What is your piece of friendship lingo? Quote, it takes extreme discretion to be in our position. This is something they all actually say all the mm-hmm. time. Examples of usage, quote, when God is making us fight her strongest battles because she thinks we're her strongest warriors. It takes extreme discretion to be in our position. It's basically like, we got this, we're supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from? Working extremely hard to ensure a better life for ourselves and our loves. Okay, you guys are just out here doing God's work.
Yeah, wait.
Shout out Chocolate Milk Art Collective.
Mm-hmm. Shout out.
That
also
is Skylar and Ethan's film.
Yeah.
Production group. Look them up on YouTube mm-hmm. and you'll get Nico and Juanjo and Lennon
yeah.
featured.
Yep.
Which is pretty awesome. That was a very fun one.
Yeah.
Thank you
I
for
like that.
All the responses, Skylar. These are really exciting. This one, I think, is from Skylar Shulkin. Shout out, my friend from Montreal who was just on exchange in Amsterdam. It says it's from Sky and all her exchange friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that that's you. If it's not, shout out anyway.
Well, the piece of friendship lingo is me when I, and then dot, dot, dot. Examples of usage, me when I lie after saying something, but we prove them wrong. Or me when I'm literally ready before you after a friend says they'll be ready, but it take 10 hours to get ready. No week is real. No week is real.
Those are hilarious.
Where did it come from? I think TikTok is the me when I lie, but we totally started giving it its own twist and using it for everything. I love that.
Yeah, that's adorable.
Yeah. No, I love taking little things and like putting in a little twist. Then like, I'm trying to... Okay, here, you look for this one. I'm going to try to think if I can think of any.
For me when I?
Yeah, of me when I. Or of... or of any kind of like lingo that I've heard and then like twisted around. I think I use me when I as well. I haven't used it in a minute, but I'm gonna start using it again. So thank you for sending that in, Sky. That's awesome.
This one is hilarious to me. I don't know the context at all, but it's so funny. Submitter name is Annie and Molly. I think these are your pals.
Oh my god! Yes!
Whoa, Molly sweetie. IE. Shout out to these two. The piece of friendship lingo is yeah, 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 I am Lord. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lord spelled with the E, like Lord, our queen, who... Also, by the way, you just heard Lord and Charlie XCX's remix from Duncan's show. Shout out, Lord.
Mm-hmm. Lovely song, lovely song.
Examples of usage following any time someone naturally says yeah or yeah, yeah, yeah. Where did it come from? South Park episode in which a 45-year-old geologist is Lord.
Yeah, 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 I am Lord, as an E?
Yeah! Picturing a 45-year-old geologist from South Park saying, yeah, 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 I am Lord. Yeah,
oh
yeah, yeah.
Oh my god. Wait, that's awesome.
These
Wait,
are so awesome. Random and fun, I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I am Lord, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, I love that, I love that. Oh my god, guys, thank you for sending that in.
Thank you for all of the submissions. We might get to read one or two afterwards because we're just so grateful for sending them. But for now, we're going to jump into an ad break just real quick, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you again for listening to Hail Discordia. We're live, CITR 101.9 FM, and we'll see you after the ads.
Of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
A person with HIV can now live a long, healthy life thanks to treatment. But the first step is to get tested. The sooner you know your HIV status, the better. You can now test yourself at home with just a prick of the finger and get results within a minute. Order a free HIV self-test kit online at selftest.catie.ca. That's selftest.catie.ca. Your health is at your fingertips. A message from CATIE, Canada's source for HIV and hepatitis C information.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshie on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshie, eat, energize.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. This is a Hail Discordia. Izzy had to leave for work, but I have two or three more submissions for you guys. We were just here reading out friendship lingo, reading out just the little words that you guys exchange between your friends. We sent out a survey and got so many amazing responses. Me and Izzy were actually like giggling like in the studio, like listening to these. So thank you guys for sending these in. I'm just going to read the last couple of responses here. So this first one is from our friend Val. And here, let me see. Okay. Well, my computer's being weird. Here we go. We have one more. That is your piece of friendship lingo. Having a business meeting. Examples of usage. I'm busy. I'm in a business meeting. Or I'm in a business meeting, but no contract will be signed. For situations where our friends have a casual date or a booty call. Love. Where did it come from? A friend has a recurrent casual hookup but didn't want to go any further. And he's a young entrepreneur and people didn't question him when he said this. But we quickly knew that many business meetings was unusual. Wait, that's funny. A business meeting. Okay, wait, that's cool. And then another one, friendship lingo, is cooking. So examples of usage, she's cooking with the guy at the bar, meaning she's getting somewhere with the guy she had eyes on. Usually the symbolism starts taking a term and we just use cooking words or food words to describe it. So where did it come from? Kind of just came out with one of our friends. I love that. I love when it's just like a friend says something and you just kind of like pick it up. And then our last ones, oh my God, wait, this is sweet. This is from my friend at home, Erica, Indy, Jones, and Fia. I'm really great friends with Erica. We went to high school together, and this is a couple of her friends, some of which I've been able to meet just like on FaceTime, but you guys all sound lovely, and thank you guys for saying this, and this is so sweet. Your piece of friendship lingo. Oompa is so kind, spelled Oompa like Oompa Loompa, and there's a red heart next to it. Examples of usage. We say it in place of saying thank you when we want to make the person we're talking to uncomfortable. That's crazy, and I love it. Wait. Where did it come from? Someone tweeted it under the Twitter thread about how the bartender at the Willy Wonka experience had to give children singular jelly beans. That's funny. Also, okay, to be a kid in the Willy Wonka factory or whatever, and to get just a single jelly bean is devious work. That's funny. Thank you guys all so much for sending in all of these responses and for just taking the time to tune in and just to chat with us and just send us the love. And like, that's so sweet. And thank you. And I appreciate that. We have one more thing, one more little section that me and Izzy recorded in preparation for the end of this episode, in which we just talk a little bit more about language and, well, I'll let you guys listen into it. So this is the end of me being live. Thank you all so much for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM, Hail Discordia. But don't leave just yet. I got a little conversation for you guys. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So welcome back from that ad break, everybody.
You're welcome back.
So happy to have you joining us once again. If you have just tuned in, this is Hail Discordia reporting live from CITR 101.9 FM. And we, as usual, are pulling our content from our very own incredible Airhead magazine Discorder mag. And so to intro the issue a little bit today, we have a couple of different thoughts. The letter from the editor for this issue, from our very own Tasha, who's the most lovely Discorder editor, talks about how Discorder is always a collective project, and therefore every issue looks a little different. We all know and love Discorder, and we all know and love how much fun, exciting, and weird content can be in there sometimes, but it's such a special project that relies on who's writing and who's contributing every single time, so it always gets to look a little different. And I loved this line from Tasha's intro, but the possibility of misinterpretation is not a threat to authenticity. It's an opportunity for connection. Because I think with writing and speaking, it's easy to think about the way that people interpret what you say, like conversation and shared language is something that we're always approaching from different sides. But it's nice to think that someone misinterpreting that or interpreting it differently can actually just be another thing to connect on. So this is kind of the thought of the types of things that we share between us when we engage in language and when we engage in conversation. And it's connected to an interest that Zoe and I have been talking about a lot recently, which is linguistics, the power of language, and just kind of the social morphing around speaking and conversation and different languages, which is so prevalent in especially the globalized world that we have now. And I think it's interesting thinking about a collective project like Discorder too, and everyone kind of speaking from their own perspective, but you have this shared language of like art production. So it's definitely been an interesting vibe to consider. But yeah, what do you think about that, Zoe?
Yeah, I think I've been thinking about language a lot, and I was thinking about it a lot, and then I stopped for a second and then I started again, and the restarting of it stemmed from when I went to Nova Scotia for a radio conference for CITR, which was super fun, and I was speaking with our programming manager Kira, who I went on the trip with, and they were talking about how it reminded them of Ireland, the environment of, and we were driving from the airport into Halifax, and I was connecting it to, oh, it's almost the trees of this place, but if they were smaller and had the water of this place and the social vibe of this place. And I just thought it was really interesting that you could put a contextual link to everything in, you know, what was it? A house isn't from nowhere.
A house from nowhere.
A house
that, When Zoe first told me that, like the way that you saw it and the way that Kira saw it, it's so interesting that we each bring this lens of like images and thoughts that we've had in life, and you see everything in relation to that context. So the house from nowhere is like kind of a philosophical joke that you can't imagine a house from nowhere, because everything that we imagine in life has the precursor of our identity and our lens. Like you can't stop seeing the world from yourself.
Exactly.
It's not really a choice we got.
No, yeah, literally. And then socially speaking, I think it's cool that you can find all of these social circles and small little webs and small little connections if you continue to refer to the same root of that, if that makes sense. You can always find it. If you've been in an alternative space in one place, you can usually find it in another space because now you have that nose to sniff it out.
And yeah, that is so true.
Yeah, and that got me thinking about, well, what is it that connects us? What is it that we're sniffing out, that we're smelling out? And I think, at least for me, a big part of it is language and vernacular, whether that be slang you're using, whether that be, that could be a hint deriving from the media that you're consuming of. I think it's a huge connector. And on a literal level, language has a huge impact on what's accessible to us. For example, English is a huge asset because it's so widely used for both conversation and for documentation. And that makes a lot of material recorded in English dually accessible to some degree, but also exclusive. At least my experience in North America, people generally expect others to know English. Some will even act out if someone doesn't know the language, which I think is a reaction, read, and prejudice. And yeah, I had a friend who was a computer science teacher, and during a class they had a student who only spoke Spanish, and luckily my friend also spoke Spanish, but they told me about how computer science languages
generally are in English or English words shortened. I found one that is a language called Latino, like the computer science, the programming language that was released in 2015, but I haven't heard of any others. But so she said that translating the lesson was really tricky, and I could imagine trying to learn computer science without also knowing English could be difficult or inconvenient and frustrating at the least. So on a literal level, language impacts how you access work opportunities, forms of media, tools. That's a completely different episode, but I feel like we should acknowledge it.
No, 100%. Because language actually has like social force, which is something mm-hmm. that we've been talking about. And that's when you talk about the contextual differences and like, what do I look for in every space? You look for like an existent social force that is making you feel safe in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But in agreeing with you about the English thing, I just think that's like so true that it's so tricky here, and language hegemony is like very prevalent and very yeah. true. I had a friend from Mexico who was talking to me a couple weeks ago and just telling me that he's so confused about how in English a lot of times people say things that they don't mean. Like, he speaks English almost perfectly and has lived here for a while, but he's like, even now it's annoying for me that I know that when someone offers me a favor, like, oh, I can drive you home, or oh, I can do that, I'm like not always supposed to respond. And it was so interesting to talk about because I didn't really realize how true that was, but there are so many ways that society functions and things that you're supposed to just go along with that are rooted into language and inflection and the way that we talk and what you say. And it can be so fake, but it's like you just go along with all these rules.
No, exactly. Because if I offer, no, exactly like you were saying, if I offer someone like, oh, do you need a ride home? I can give you a ride home. But then there's that social script of, no, they're supposed to say like, no, it's fine. And then I'm supposed to insist. And they're supposed to be like, well, if you insist. And it's a four-part step instead of just me saying, no, I literally can take you home. If you need a ride home, I'm driving in that direction. Just get in the car, and like, we don't need to do this awkward little like back and forth. Like, that's just not really a thing here.
The fact that there's a phrase, if you insist, like it requires insistence for yeah. you to actually do the favor. I mean, it's not a first time thing.
No, exactly.
And my friend was like, if I tell you I can drive you, it's because I want to and have time. I wouldn't tell you if I couldn't. And I
was right. Exactly. And I think that's so interesting how language has, whether it be just vernacular and just like colloquial, like social scripts like that, or just literal grammatical language, like has such an impact on how we socialize. Okay, wait, I didn't tell you about this one. I was looking at this TED Talk that was from Lindsay Morcom, who gave a TED Talk on Indigenous languages and revitalization. And she's learning Anishinaabenoan, which is her, she said, was her heritage language. And she was talking about how similar to how in Romantic languages, things are marked as masculine and feminine. In Anishinaabenoan, it's marked as animate and inanimate. Whoa. So, yeah. So the things that we would expect to be marked as animate, like people, pets, animals, things like that, like are marked as animate. But other things that we, you know, as English speakers wouldn't expect, like rocks, for example, are marked as animate. Grammatically speaking. And that just speaks, I just feel like that speaks so much to like the culture of it. She was saying that speaks a lot to the culture and to the heritage and to the understandings of what is alive and where life energy flows. I don't know, I need to look more into it, but I feel like there's just a lot of lessons there. And like, I definitely started thinking about, I don't know, I feel like I don't know if I fully have the words for it, but it's changed the way that I think about the environment around me.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That reminds me of something that is said by Robin Wall Kimmerer in Braiding Sweetgrass.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Wall Kimmerer is a Potawatomi author who wrote this book, Braiding Sweetgrass, which some of you may have heard of. It's a great, great book about kind of human experience with nature and just a lot of different things, but I listened to one section of it in an audiobook once, and she was talking about the pronouns that we use for in the environment. Because especially in English, you have it, which is like extremely inanimate. And Robin Wall Kimmerer proposed a new pronoun to use for environmental objects, natural objects and natural phenomena, which is kin. And I tried using it for a little bit. I found it kind of boxy and difficult, but I listened to this with my aunt and we were just talking about the idea of adjusting and what that would take and how it changes the way that you think about something when you talk about it with a different pronoun and a different just contextualization, not as an object to like claim, but as something that's equally animate. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. I love language.
I love language too. I think one of the really awesome examples of language as a social force also that we've talked about is like something that we see in our own friend groups and circles, but is like the force of language inclusivity. And a lot of that goes with queer reclamation of language, especially in just the circles that we have watched vernacular grow in at UPC. Mm-hmm. But I love to explain that we use the word amigue with our friends, or I do at least, but it's just kind of passed around with some of our friends because a lot of us speak Spanish as well as English, and a lot of us are non-binary or just have different gender expressions. So by calling each other amigue, it's immediately language inclusive and it's immediately a gender inclusive environment. And that kind of just lingo changes the way that everybody feels comfortable in that space, which is so powerful.
Yeah, that's so huge and that's so powerful. I love what that does because that really does change the environment, because it's the small things like that of just changing your vernacular and letting people know that that immediately makes the entire environment as a whole more accepting, because I feel like that's so intentional and so personal. Mm-hmm. I was having this conversation with two of my friends, Hannah and Stella. Hannah is she grew up in Egypt and Cairo for the most part, and then Stella's from England, and we were having a conversation. I'll see if I can put in the recording. It was at Bowen Island. I might have to re-record it because at one point we had to leave for our ferry like in the middle of it, and so there's a lot of running around. But Hannah was telling us about how the linguistic structure, like the grammatic structure of Arabic, it's more difficult than it is in than it's harder to change the usage of a pronoun in Arabic than it is in English, where we can replace she her or he him pronouns with they them and understand that that can be in reference to a singular person. It's more difficult to make that adjustment in Arabic, specifically because you is a word that is gendered. I could not just say, hey, do you want to go to the store? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? Without including a gendered word, or without changing the gender of the word you. So she was saying that for her, with her non-binary friends, her and all of her friends change between the she, her, and he, him pronouning, she, her, and he, him pronouns for the word you, if that makes sense. And she said that she feels for those who are really trying to make that change, it forces a societal engagement and intention, because it's not just a systematic one-time substitution. It forces her to actually engage with the content and actually engage with it and to truly be intentional on switching between. So if I can get a recording of her saying that, then I will include that. But if not, I think that's the best explanation that I have on hand.
Yeah.
That.
No, that's
it was awesome. Really interesting. Because that's, yeah, again, the changing of a social force because of the language that's around you and the language that you're using.
Mm-hmm. Completely. And it also the intention thing, like, not being able to just make one switch in your brain once, but having to every time think about making a space inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I, I think it's cool also, one of the sort of implications of this kind of talk about language shaping spaces and stuff is, at least for me when considering this topic, I started to think about not so much the members on either side that are trying to like meet in the middle through language and through conversation, but also what is created between them. So when we have that kind of vernacular in our friend group, what kind of space do we share that's not attached to any of us, but that is like in the middle that we all get to create, that we've all put in from each part of ourselves. And then we get to kind of pass that around and invite new people to dip their toe in it and like see if someone else has a color for it. And it's so fun because it just kind of exists. Mm-hmm. And I love the connection with that and Airhead, the Discord kind of phenomena. So I really suggest that you guys check this out in the recent issue, because there's a funny and sweet little entry about Dear Airhead by Jesse Thomas, JT, who's our archivist right now at the station. And if you walk into the back of the station, they'll probably be there doing awesome archive stuff and are so sweet. And this little piece is just hilarious. And I think it's interesting. Dear Airhead was this column that existed in really old Discorder magazines and just kind of was prevalent over the whole history of Discorder, because we've been looking through the archive. And it's like a dear editor kind of thing. It's dear blank. It's like you can write your all your issues in. It's like American Girl magazine. You can write yourself in and they'll just take it and go. But it's funny because Airhead becomes this disembodied, like unknown but also ubiquitous figure who everybody has a piece of, but it changes every time you ask a question. And that's also kind of what conversation becomes and what shared space becomes. And it's kind of a sweet thing.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love the way you put that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's fun. Airhead probably connected so many people over time, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And
there's also a really awesome quote from Shayna Bursey's article on Treeform Music Festival, which is the theme of the music festival. By the way, I'm dying to go to this festival because I think this is the coolest theme ever. It's, quote, put the right people in the same place at the same time, and then things will happen. And I love that it doesn't even say the right things will happen. It just says mm-hmm. things will happen. And it's like, yeah, if you put the right people in,
something will happen. No, some things. Yeah, exactly. And I think that has to do with like that shared just frame of thinking. I think if we're all on the same page, whether that's spoken or not, about whatever it may be, you can kind of just feel when you're on the same page or have the or think the same way about somebody. The collaboration that goes on and the environment that is created is so beautiful because everyone has something to contribute, exactly like you were saying about using amigas and about when you have a group of people who are all on the same page about wanting to create an environment that is so inclusive, whether through language or through whatever. I think those values tend to embody everything, if that makes sense. And then mm-hmm. the entire environment and feeling of environment and vibe, for lack of a better word, you can tell has been approached with such care through those values.
Mm-hmm. I know, it really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. But I want to hear what you're talking about, because I'm looking at these notes right here and it just says Juliet saying period. Can you elaborate on what that is? Because I want to hear that story.
Juliet saying period. Juliet, yeah, told me that she's something that's interesting. We were talking about the interesting phenomena of introducing queer like friendship vernacular into a straight like romantic situation, and she said period, and then her straight romantic situation was like, what? And she said, oh let me explain, and then went through basically all of the lingo, and it was kind of hilarious, but it was also, I think, like an exercise for her to think about the spaces that she wants to be in and the inclusivity that she cares about and like what it meant for her to have someone who she's interested in to be like hearing about that, you know?
Yeah, that's so cool. I love being I don't know, I love being shown like different like bits of slang. Me and my friend Erica from home, We talk on the phone a lot still, like, and have been throughout university. And it's really funny because sometimes we'll hear a word, whether up here or up here in Vancouver, or she'll hear a word like down there in California and be like, ooh, like that's exactly what that feeling is. And we'll tell each other about it. So I taught her about cheesed and no. I taught her about muck. I taught her about muck because that's just a good one. Like muck, you're eating something, you're devouring something. It's just like good. Like you just like, you get into it. Like that's muck, you're mucking. Sharing that with her, she's like, no, because that's so what that is. Like that just sounds like what that is.
Yes,
like that, like it's muck and snatched when you have everything you need. I'm sat, I'm comfortable, I'm not too hot, I'm not too cold, I have my water, I have my phone, I have
shout out Juliet,
perfect volume, shout out Juliet, snatched, amazing, because that's exactly what that is. And we'll exchange little words back and forth.
I also think that term is a little bit Franglish. Like, I think that came from Juliet and her Montreal best friend would always be snatched. It's very, like, in our apartment, it's like, oh, it's like Juliet will be like, oh, I need my water bottle. And I'll say, oh, you're kind of snatched, so I can get it for you. Like, if you're snatched, no problem. You don't have to move. If you have everything that you need and all of your stuff set up, no, you never have to move.
Exactly. And just how language, again, just influences the way in which we move socially. Now I know that if someone's snatched, like, and I'm fine, like I can go and do whatever it is, someone knocks at the door, I can go and get it. Now I'm gonna go and get it. But without that word and without that understanding of that's what they're feeling, and if I were in that position, I wouldn't want to interrupt that feeling. And so knowing that, I'm just gonna go and take care of whatever it is that needs to be taken care of that could interrupt that feeling for them. Now that's impacted the way that I move through the world now.
Yeah, like that whole situation is set from one word and everybody gets what's going on.
Exactly.
It's kind of the best. I'm getting giggly about all of our language connections. But listeners, keep this stuff in your mind because we get to have another episode about this issue, which is part of Discorder coming out every 2 months. So think about it. Think about other awesome stuff you've seen in the magazine. DM us if you have any specific requests for stuff you'd like to see. And, you know, enjoy your time with your friends. Use those fun words that you guys have. Love that language is moving you through the world in a great way.
No, exactly. Make new ones. Remember any old ones. Like, okay, yeah, what you were saying about ASAP Rocky. I remember first and second year of university, or like a while ago, whenever it was, I would always say ASAP like Rocky. Oh, I need to go ASAP like Rocky.
And as I forgot, an ASAP, but ASAP like Rocky.
And one day I stopped saying it. Like, I think I just kind of forgot about it. But then you started saying it again. And I've honestly started saying it again since. It's a fun one. It's
horrible.
It's a very fun one.
It's a fun one. Okay.
All that being said, think about how language moves you through the world.
And we love you
so much.
It's CITR 101.9 FM
and Discorder Magazine, baby.
We and are Discorder Magazine, baby.
Peace out. And we'll see you guys at our next episode, again, every third Thursday, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can listen here live on CITR 101.9 FM. You can also tune in on our website, or you can find us on Spotify. Hail! Discordia! You'll see the logo. You know it. I hope. Maybe. Bam.
Zoe and Izzy out.
Deuces.